Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah. Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Hello, folks. Welcome back to another edition of Football Theory. I'm Lifetime Longhorn Rod Babers. Pleased to be joined by the coach, as always. I got to make sure I get at least most of his accomplishments out there before I introduce him. He was a former high school coach at Burnett, also Capel, Brownwood, Belton, and Rotan. I believe those were the Yellowhammers. Is that was it?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
Yeah, got to get it right. Also, he played college football at Abilene Christian. He also coached there in multiple stints there at Abilene Christian, was on that staff. He was also on the Texas football staff in a number of different capacities as a director of high school relations, also a consultant with that staff as well for five different seasons with multiple coaches there. Also, you can catch his latest ventures and his latest work over at ShipleyRanches.com. Coach Bob Shipley joining us for Football Theory. What's up, Coach? How you doing?
Hey, great day, man. Great day.
It is a great day. As a matter of fact, we have some great news. I enjoy working with Coach Shipley so much that we're going to actually make it happen with a new show that Coach Shipley, myself, and CJ Vogel are going to have. We're going to do it on Mondays and Thursdays. It's going to be from 4:15 to about 5:30. Maybe we'll go a little bit longer, depending on if the topics are hot and the conversation is really good. But we're going to do a show Monday and Thursday. 4:15 starting up. It's going to be called The Winning Drive with Coach Shipley, myself, and CJ Vogel. So we'll have you covered. We got the coach. We got a player. Man, CJ Vogel handles the recruiting end of it. Also does a great job breaking stories from the 40 Acres. Got a lot of inside knowledge there. So, and my man and coach has got probably more inside knowledge and knows more folks than CJ and I combined. So it's going to be really fun. Looking forward to it, coach. And that's starting up, by the way, Monday. On Monday, we're going to start it up. And coach and I'll be working together in two different shows. So, coach, hey, man, coach, I didn't even know we was going to be partners like this, coach. So I should have.
We're like Mutt and Jeff.
But no, it's going to be fun. Coach and I are looking forward to that. So keep that in mind, folks. If you're looking for some entertainment, we'll be talking Longhorns, college football. Honestly, I don't know exactly what we'll be talking, but if it's fun and it's a topical that Coach, myself, and CJ Vogel will get into it. Speaking of topical, nothing more topical than spring football, which is we're less than a week away from Texas spring football. So that's what we're diving into on Football Theory, man. We're going to talk about every position. Basically, it's going to be a thought exercise. It's going to be a bit of kind of a thought experiment. Coach and I are going to go through every position, offense and defense, and I'm going to throw out either a topic, a concern or a question that we need answered or we need more clarity on. Hopefully we'll get that this spring when the Longhorns are engaging in spring practice. So we'll talk about that. That's what we'll get into. Before we get started, let's always give a shout out to our sponsor. We are very, very thankful to Laura Baker. Football Theory brought to you by the accomplished Austin Realtor, Laura Baker. Laura and the Andy Allen team at Keller Williams can handle all of your real estate needs in the Austin area. Laura is not only a diehard Longhorn fan, but a longtime Austin real estate expert. So give her a shout if you have any concerns or needs in the Austin area in regards to real estate at 512-784-0505. That's 512-784-0505. All right, coach, let's start on offense. I'm going to throw out We'll go through positions and I'll throw out a question that maybe you can help us answer, or that maybe we need to have more clarity on, or maybe we'll get that question answered during spring football. But it could be something that ends up being really important to the future of this Texas football team in 2024. Let's start at quarterback. A couple of questions I can throw out there at quarterback. I think the first question at quarterback is, can Quinn Ewers make it through an entire football season healthy? Probably is the biggest question.
That's a great question. I'm feeling good about the offensive line. We still have, a question mark or two. Obviously, that's going to dictate to a large extent, his health. As long as he doesn't, try to take off scrambling and, take on somebody. It's going to be up to the offensive line, to give him the protection. But, if Quinn is healthy, if our offensive line can give him the time, you and I have talked about this many times, but, he's got to just fine tune his deep ball. At times he's really impressive with a deep ball. I think about Xavier's catch at Alabama, great throw. There's times that he's really, really plays like the best quarterback in the country. And then other times, the deep ball, not so much. But, keep that touchdown to ratio number in check. And I think he's if he can stay healthy – and he can develop into a consistent deep ball thrower, then I think he has a chance to be the best in the country.
He does. That's a good point. He's got a chance to be the first quarterback taken off the board. Right now, at least all the quarterback rankings, they have Carson Beck at Georgia ranked ahead of him, Shedeur Sanders at Colorado ranked ahead of him. But he's right there in that discussion, and he's got all the raw materials. We know that. In regards to the question about the deep ball, I got a stat for you about that here in just a second. But Quinn Ewers did gain 10 pounds. So hopefully that 10 pounds is all in the right place so that he can be a little bit more durable. He hadn't really made it through an entire football season since his sophomore year, I believe. So that's one of the big questions I think scouts want to answer. And putting on some armor is a nice way to do that for Quinn. And you said it, Coach. You got to make better decisions when you're running the football. You can't try to run over linebackers. Nobody's questioning your testicular fortitude, Quinn. If you're going to be a franchise quarterback in the league, they want to see you make better decisions about protecting that investment. And they're going to obviously invest a lot of money in you if you're going to be the face of a franchise. About Quinn being a better deep ball thrower, he completed 33% of his passes that traveled 20-plus yards or more in the air last season. That was good for 76th in the FBS. When you have weapons like Xavier Worthy and A.D. Mitchell, who are both going to be first-round picks potentially in the NFL draft because of their speed and explosivity, there are a lot of fans, Longhorn fans, that question whether Texas were effective enough cashing in on some of those deep balls down the field. And I'll give Sark credit. Sark wants to complete more deep balls, but he realized that his quarterback's not great at it, so he decided to, decrease the amount of deep balls within the offense. And they still were a really explosive offense. But think about if they were better with the deep ball, how lethal this offense could be.
Yeah, no doubt about that. Yeah. And I think another thing that this whole offense, staff and personnel on the field, I just think the red zone focus has got to be just you got to have that killer mentality, man. You got to be able to put drives away, finish drives. And I don't know. Some of that is certainly a play calling, but probably a pretty large, percentage of it. But still, it's just guys out on the field having the type of attitude that they can't keep us out of the end zone. We're going to get it in the end zone. And just expect that to happen. And I don't know that we expected it last season. We seem to be a little bit, shoot ourselves in the foot somehow. We get sacked, get negative yardage somehow, and we just weren't able to. I can't remember the exact. You're my stat guy, but red zone offense was one of the lowest in the country, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, they were 120th in the country in touchdown percentage in the red zone, which is why they lost games, right? You lost an Oklahoma game because they had a goal line stand. You had a turnover in the red zone. Why'd you lose that Washington game? Well, go look at the red zone offense for Texas in that game versus Washington. So, yeah, I'm with you, Coach. There's no doubt. I mean, not for reds. If your red zone offense was even average, you would have been undefeated in playing for a national title last year. If it was even average. But it wasn't average. It was way below that. If they're going to be a better red zone team, the offensive line is going to be a big factor in that. Let me ask you this. Who is the best starting five on the O-line? And a lot of that, we already know who the best starting four is, right? You're talking about Kelvin Banks. Jake Majors is a part of that best starting four right now. DJ Campbell is in that conversation. I think Cam Williams is a part of that. But whether it's Cole Hudson or Hayden Connor or Neto Imozulu, you know, that's just a first world problem to have within those seven guys. You got to figure out who your best five are. And I think the solution to finding your best five is figuring out who that left guard's going to be. Because that right now seems like the uncertainty, whether that's going to end up being, I mean, Hayden Connor's played both right tackle and left guard. You know, Cole Hudson's a guy that could be a left guard for you. Neto is a guy that could be the left guard. That's what I think the biggest question is for the O-line. Who's the best starting five, pretty much?
Yeah, that's a good question. Yeah, there are some no-brainers, you know, on there. We know that, you know, Kelvin Banks and, you know, Jake Majors. I look for Hayden Connor to get the start and going into spring ball at left guard and Cam Williams at right tackle. Mm-hmm. I think that's probably what that's what I'm predicting. And DJ Campbell at right guard. But you know, we have some guys that are going to compete for some playing time. I think Cole Hudson and, you know, Neto is a guy that is, that, you know, they're going to take a good look at this spring, but it's pretty solid group and pretty solid with our depth. I mean, you know, I think there's still going to be some question marks there in terms of depth, but I've certainly seen it a whole lot worse on the 40.
Yeah. Oh man, this is the best shape the O-line's been in since I don't see probably since mid to late 2000s. And honestly, late 2000s, Coach.
No,
the O-line, it wasn't the exactly right. It didn't have the upside and talent this O-line is. This is the best the O-line's been since mid 2000s.
I have to agree with you on that. Now that 2009 offensive line was very resilient. Mm-hmm. They had a lot of heart. They were they played well as a team, but physically, none of those guys made it to the league. That if I remember correctly. And as a matter of fact, you know, I asked people to tell me who the running back was, starting running back for the majority of that season, and most people can't tell me. We played for the national championship, and we did not have a undersized, probably overachieving offensive line, and we had a no-name running back. You know, once Newton got hurt, we were
Mm-hmm.
Are you looking that up?
I'm trying to see. I'm trying to look at that O-line. I'm trying to look at that O-line. I'm like, man, who was – I'm trying to figure out who that starting O-line was, but they were not an O-line that had a lot of high NFL upside.
No,
remember that.
They played their tails off every week. They were a great unit, but the talent of this offensive line is, in my opinion they have a lot more upside. Those guys were just great team players. You know, they just weren't. But Chris Hall was a first-team All-American.
Chris Hall, it's a good player.
I think Chris Hall was a center.
Chris Hall, you're right. Yeah.
Yeah, and then after that season, he starts running and getting in shape, and he looks like – I mean, he weighs about 190 pounds or something.
I know. And nothing is weirder than seeing an O-lineman who lost weight. And it's always great because it's healthy for him. But when you see these old linemen, like you see Dan Neal, and you see these guys, and they've lost like 100-something pounds, it's like, dude, you just look like a smaller version the guy that I knew with the same head and everything. It's weird, man, to see somebody.
Then you see the wide receivers and running back blowing up. You know?
That's right. That's right. That's a great point, Coach. You do. You do. All the skill position guys, they seem to blow up a little bit.
But I don't think we're going to have any guys off of this starting offensive line coming into the spring that's going to come back and weigh 190 pounds after. I mean, these are just big guys.
These are big humans.
Guys that are God. I mean, you know, you can do some things to enhance it. You can do some things to fine tune, but those are God made bodies right there, man. And they're made and built for this. They're not guys that, you know, gained a bunch of weight and got strong. And then 3 years later, you look back and go, yeah, you weren't an offensive line. These guys are always going to be offensive linemen.
Always. I mean, they're
always going to be known as offensive linemen. And it's just a really exciting time to be able to have the opportunity or the potential to have one of the best offensive lines since Vince ran it in at the Rose Bowl.
I agree with you, Coach, on that. There's no doubt. Let's move to running back. Biggest question at running back, at least for me. Honestly, there are a couple of questions I guess we could throw out there. I wonder about the play distribution, how you're going to divide up the snaps and the reps between a Cedric Baxter and a Jaden Blue. I think that's probably, for me, the biggest question. And then I guess we can just say among all the running backs, right, well, how the reps going to be divided up between the running backs, C.J. Baxter and Jaden Blue. But then we see Savion Redd has gained 26 pounds. It's like, what's that about? It makes sense if he's going to be the short yardage goal line weapon instead of the red cat. You can just hand it off to him if he's got that knack for converting those situations. Or maybe he's going to be your modern fullback. I don't know, like a Chris Obanaya or what Shano has with Kyle Juszczyk. I have no idea what Sark is thinking about with that, but I'm sure they have a plan. How do you think the snaps are going to be divided, the snaps between the running backs coming up next season?
Yeah, I don't know. I think they'll all share snaps this spring probably. They don't want to get anybody too much work, but they want to make sure they're all ready. I think you got three guys there that could start for most teams in the country, or for the majority of teams. I think, Baxter and Blue, I think, are probably going to carry the load. I don't know how, you know, I just don't know how they're going to mix that rotation in, whoever has a hot hand. But, and I think, you know, you may have one guy that was more specialized in pass blocking or leak routes out of the backfield more than another. And I don't know exactly who that would be yet, but I see. And, you know, Savion Redd, he's going to be on the field too. I don't know what that distribution is going to look like, but I think they'll all get some quality playing time.
Yeah, I will encourage Sark, and I've been doing this for 3 years now, so I'll keep doing it, keep banging the drum. More pony package, more two tailback sets. It works. It worked against Washington in the Sugar Bowl. It worked when you had Bijan and Rojo. It worked with Jonathan Brooks and C.J. Baxter and Jaden Blue. It's your most effective, most explosive, and most efficient personnel package to date. So more of it. There you go. That'll solve that problem. Let's go to wide receiver. How many wide receivers do we see in regular rotation for the Longhorns with this really talented group? I think that's a question that we all want to know. Some people want to ask who's going to be the number one wide receiver. Maybe there's less drama in that because most people think it's Isaiah Bond. I think Jonte Cook still got a chance to be that number one guy, but maybe you'll have an Xavier Worthy, AD Mitchell type relationship where it may not matter as much because both guys will get their share of targets. But is there going to be a expanded rotation of wide receivers? Because Sark usually keeps his group pretty tight, Coach, in terms of usually three guys, maybe four. That's when he was at Alabama and had four first-round guys potentially. Will Texas expand to more than three wide receivers in regular rotation?
Yeah, I like the way that he rotates his receivers. I never really understood the previous staff and it's like they had to get guys so many snaps.
Yeah. And,
nobody really got in a groove. I mean, you just didn't have your go-to guys. But, you know, I think this is going to be a new look for us at receiver with a lot of new guys coming in. Although they're guys that have had a lot of success and are very talented, I think the spring will go a long way in telling Sark how he's going to utilize them, who he's going to utilize, and how he's going to utilize them. And, you know, if these guys come through like they could come through, we could have four guys seeing the bulk of the action. I mean, yep. You know, you got Silas Bolden and Jontae Cook. I mean, you know, those guys are elite at, you know, what they do. And of course, Isaiah Bond and Golden Wingo. I mean, you know, there's a lot of talent there. I could see four guys getting the majority of the snaps. Three, pretty easy to pick out three, but I don't know who you leave out.
No, I'm with you. That's why I say I think it's got to be four, too. Isaiah Bond and Jontae Cook at the top of the list. That I love what Silas Bolden brings to the table, just in terms of how.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Really twitchy he is. I mean, you got a guy that's just as quick as he is fast. Sark loves dialing up specific plays to get those guys in space. And then Matthew Golden. I don't think you can deny him. I mean, he's going to come in as one of your best kick returners. And maybe those are your kick returns and punt returns right there. Matthew Golden, kickoff return, Silas Bolden, that punt return. But I think you got to play all four of those guys. And then you got to sprinkle in a little Ryan Wingo because, I mean, he's a prodigy. And a phenom, much like you sprinkled in Jontae Cook this year, you'll sprinkle him in a little bit as well. Tight end, this is a question I have about you for tight end. Maybe this is a quick conversation. Do we see a decrease in the amount of 12 personnel, one back, two tight ends? When you had JT Sanders and Gunnar Helm, you know, you got to have JT Sanders on the field. And Sark loves 12 personnel. As a matter of fact, his first year, he was about 40% 12 personnel. Since then, he has dropped to around 35 to 30% 12 personnel. And it's mostly because he's expanding his repertoire of personnel groupings. Now you see more two-back sets. You see more of the 6-0 line package, Big 11, Big 12. You're always going to get 50% 11 personnel with Sark. But 12 personnel, he says tight end is the second most important position in his offense behind quarterback. Without a JT Sanders, do we see a dip in the amount of 12 personnel, which right now is probably hovering between 33%, somewhere around there?
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, that's another one of those questions that's going to have to be answered this spring. You know, Amari, we need to see what Amari's capable of doing. We've seen Gunner. He's a serviceable tight end. He's not, you know, he's not real flashy, I guess you might say. He's not a guy but he's consistent. He's serviceable. Yeah. He's consistent. You can win with him at tight end. I'd be interested to go watch a couple of spring practices and see what they're doing with that. But Amari is, you know, he gives you the possibility to have a two tight end package. And then, you know, with the other guys, you know, Juan Davis and Malik, you know, I don't know. We just need to see what those guys can do this spring.
Yeah, that's why I wonder if, you know, they don't get what they like at tight end, if you'll see an increase in maybe 10 personnel, the red package that he had at Alabama when he had four wide receivers on the field, one back, zero tight ends, an increase in the two tailback sets that I've talked about, the pony package, an increase in your 6-0 line package, because those are positions where you have an embarrassment of riches in right now. You got a lot of wide receivers that are talented. You got a lot of old linemen that are talented. You're deep there. You got a lot of running backs that are talented. You're deep there. Not as deep at tight end. Why force the issue? Put your talent on the field, and you got packages to do that. That's why I predict maybe a decrease in 12 personnel, slight decrease. Let's jump to the defensive side of the ball. D-line. I think everybody has the same question about the D-line. Will another interior defensive lineman emerge so that you could have a healthy rotation of defense and interior defensive linemen like you've had the last 2 years when you've had the deepest D-line room in the country, arguably? You have Alfred Collins. You got Vernon Broughton. Saveya was a great pickup via the transfer portal. Will you find out if you have a fourth potentially and someone who could preferably play the zero technique if you need it?
Yeah, Aaron Bryant could be that guy, or Mitchell. You know, it again, great competition this spring to be able to see. I am cautiously optimistic about this group. There's not, you know, you don't have the no brainers like we had last year.
Yeah,
I'm part of me wants to say that's a concern, but I'm, like I said, I'm cautiously optimistic about it. I'm looking forward to seeing what Bryant could do down there, maybe at a nose, a zero, one, you know, technique. And Mitchell, we'll see what they can do. You've got Alex January in there too.
Yeah.
So we'll see. We'll see how that goes. But I'm cautiously optimistic about their future.
Yeah, I am too, because I'm hearing great things about Alfred Collins and Vernon Broughton. I think you're going to be okay with your frontline guys. The question is, when you have to spell them and rotate, will there be a significant drop-off with those guys? That's what you want to figure out. And there's another transfer portal window, potentially, if you need to pursue it. Okay, linebackers. Basically, who starts opposite Anthony Hill, I believe, is probably the most probably the most frequently asked question among Longhorn fans about linebacker. Who's going to be the other linebacker? We know Anthony Hill's going to be one of them. Who's the other guy? Is it Benda for you, David Benda? Is it Leonga Lafau, who I've heard really good things about? Is Maurice Blackwell? He could be one of those guys that steps up in that role. He's moved around from safety to linebacker. Now, who do you think, Coach? Who do you think has the best chance to win that job this spring?
Well, I don't know. That's going to be fun to watch for sure. I think, you know, Lafau is a guy that everybody's, I think, excited to see, you know, what he can do. And he's a guy that a lot of people are penciling in, you know, as a starter. You know, Blackshire is another guy that will be battling out with him. And, you know, Trey Moore, Blackwell, you know, I don't know, man. It's going to be a battle for those guys. I do like the fact that you've got an experienced guy like David Benda, who is he's not an all-American kind of guy, but again, he's a little bit like Gunnar Helms. He's good enough to win with.
Yep.
You know, he's a serviceable linebacker. I think a linebacker that he can win in the SEC. He's not going to be dominant. He never has been a dominant type of guy. He's a good program guy. I was involved with his recruiting. And just a guy who is a great guy to be around, but he's got a nose, and I think he's got a good nose for the ball, and he's certainly proved that he can be effective, you know, on the field for us as a starter. Whether he will start or whatever, you know, I don't know. You know, if they've got him behind Anthony Hill, I think you've got to find a way to get him on the field.
Yeah, no, that's a good point there. And Leonga Lafau, I think, is the popular pick by a lot of folks. A lot of expectations for him. Let's get to the defensive backs. It's my realm. And I think the biggest question about the defensive backs, if you want to go overall, I got a ton of questions I can throw out there. But will the secondary be a strength this year? Because I don't believe the secondary has been a strength since Sark's got here. I think, you know, at coverage at times has been a liability even. You can't say their strength. The linebacking core at one point has been a strength for Texas. Defensive line because of the interior defensive line. I think this season it'll be because of the edges on the D-line. But if you put the D-line there as a group, they become a strength at times, at least in terms of their run-stuffing ability. The O-line, I think, will be a strength this year. Quarterback has been a strength. Wide receiver. And tight end has turned into a strength. The coaches have done a good job of developing talent to become essentially where they can be strengths of the team and not weaknesses, where you don't have holes in your roster pretty much. The secondary hasn't really achieved that just yet. Is this the year that the secondary is considered strength? I think it is. I think you got veterans, Jade Barron, Makuba. I expect big things from Malik Muhammad. I expect him to take an exponential leap. I love Derek Williams' game. Even toward the end of last year, the light started to come on for him. Terrence Brooks. Also, I'm a fan of Terrence Brooks. I love his footwork. I'd want to see him get his hands on guys' line of scrimmage a little bit more. But I think this group is ready for a breakout season, the secondary. And I think by the end of the season, we're talking about it as a strength of the team.
Yeah. Well, it's funny that our offense needs to work on the deep ball, and so does our defense.
And that's so, fair.
You know, our cornerbacks, you know, are the concern for me. And I think we're athletic enough. I don't know. You tell me, can you develop guys to high point the ball and time their play on the ball better? Or do you think that's more just like a time? I mean, you know, either you got the timing, you have the knack to know when to look back. I mean, you know, as a DB and you see that ball coming, what's your thought process?
There's no, and I love the way you ended that, coach, about the process, but there's no doubt, to address what you brought up earlier, I think it is more of a God-given trait. I think it's instinctual. Some guys just play the ball. I've said this before. They're called ball hawks for a reason. And some guys, they live for the football. And they've always played the football. It's programmed in their football DNA. They're havoc players, they're ball-minded players. And those guys usually played offense in high school, or they were versatile players, maybe play on the offensive side of the ball. So they know how to play the ball, and they actually have the ability to high point the ball, to time it out correctly, right? To judge the trajectory of the ball. You see sometimes DBs, they don't even judge the trajectory of the ball correctly. They'll stop running too early, or overrun the football, or jump too early. Well, it's because he's been a DB his whole life. You go see those guys like Trevon Diggs, who played wide receiver out of high school. Those guys, who's a punt returner in college, those guys, they love the football, and they're comfortable when the ball's in the air, and they make great plays on the ball. Those are ball hawks. I played with a guy, Nathan Basher, that had that ability. I did not have that ability. I know it's natural because I had it at the high school level, but when as the competition continued to increase, I lost that ability because I played with quarterbacks who were better and wide receivers that were better. But I recognized that, coach. So I had what Coach Aquino calls a panic plan. And your panic plan is, what do you do when the ball's in the air and it's a deep ball? That's your panic plan. You don't have enough time to think about what you're going to do when it's a curl route, or if it's an underneath route or a six route. You're just reacting. Open my hips, or do I flip my hips? You know, am I outside leverage, inside leverage? It's more muscle memory. But when the ball's thrown deep, you actually do have time. And it's weird how it slows down to adjust and to think about what your technique is going to be. And I wasn't great at playing the football, so I would play the hands, because you need your hands to catch the football. You're going to flash them. As soon as you flash them, I just got to shoot them hands. Or I'd play the eyes, what the hands will show when he's ready to catch the football, especially on a deep ball. He's got to get his hands ready. Once he gets his hands ready, I just got to time it out. And his eyes are going to get huge. In the NFL, they actually have drills where they work calm eyes, so your eyes don't get like this when the ball's coming, so your eyes are still calm and cool and collected when the ball's coming. Because DBs, when I'm basically what they call out of phase, which means kind of out of the ideal position, when I'm out of phase, I gotta look for the hands and I gotta look for the eyes, because I'm not in a position ready to play the football. And that's what I often did on the deep ball. Did it work every time? No, there are some times where, hey, man, no technique is good enough. Guy's going to make a damn play on the football. But for my skill set, if I would have been trying to play the ball every time, I guarantee you Longhorn fans would not think very fondly of me like they do today. All right? Because that wasn't my skill set, coach. And I'd look good trying to do it. But then at the end, I would have not gotten the desired result. So I think what you have now is players who don't – first of all, they're what I think is wrong from DB coach perspective, they're telling them how to play every football. And you can't be that rigid in your coaching. You have to give the players tools so that they can determine in what situation and circumstance they need to apply those tools and use those tools. You can't say, hey, every deep ball, you have to play it this way. Because as you know, coach, that's never going to be applicable, because the play is never going to work out that way. I'm never going to be in the same position every time. So you have to figure out what tools you need to be successful in that situation. And I was fast enough to always be in a decent position on the receiver. Was I skilled enough to be able to play the football in the air? I didn't think so. So I'm going to use my speed to stay close to the receiver, and then I'm going to play whatever really easy to me. the hands and the eyes.
Yeah.
And some guys, I don't think they do an honest evaluation about their skill set and know if are you a ball hawk? Are you a ball-minded defender? Or are you a guy like Rod B, who's more of a technician? And hey, man, I got to play the man. I can't let my man beat me because my man will lead me to the ball. I'm a man leads the ball guy. Some guys are, they're ball-centric and the ball at all costs. And I wasn't that guy. As a DB, I would say oftentimes the coaches who are being too rigid in how they need to play every deep ball, because you can't play it the same, and guys are trying to play it like the coach told me to, instead of doing what's most comfortable to them. And number two, they don't have a panic plan. And my panic plan was always eyes, hands. Once I get them, I'm going to find the eyes and I'm going to find the hands and I'll break it up. That's my best chance at breaking it up.
Yeah. I always saw, not always, but many times saw a correlation with receivers and DBs that were good basketball players, because they understand body positioning.
Yeah.
And they understand, for example, a lob pass or something, going up and positioning your body, whether it's a rebound or whether it's a lob pass inside or whatever, to high point the ball, to shield the defender. And, it's just a really easy transition for those guys, it seems like, because they've been used to it. And so many times a receiver can make a play with perfect coverage because he understands body positioning.
Yep.
He understands when the ball's in the air, he understands how to adjust so that he's going to have the best position. Because a DB, a lot of times you're chasing that guy. You don't have the luxury of you looking back like the receiver. And then, of course, the receiver, the hardest ones to cover are the guys that aren't cool, and they'll put their hands up at the last minute and snag it. Mm-hmm. Those guys running like this are the ones that you like to cover, because they're not very well coached, and not many of those guys around anymore. It's become so technical, to
flash your hand.
Yeah, no doubt. Right. But anyway, back to our secondary. I think our DBs are going to get a lot of work on the deep ball, because in one on ones and so forth, because our offense is going to certainly be, trying to develop their success rate on the deep balls. But I'm cautiously optimistic about this bunch.
Yeah, I think we should be, man. I think it could end up being a strength overall. All right, before we get out of here, let's once again thank our wonderful sponsor. We appreciate all the support of our Laura Baker. She is an Austin real estate expert and can handle all of your needs, all your concerns in the Austin area in regards to real estate. Football Theory is brought to you by Laura Baker and the Andy Allen team at Keller Williams. That can handle all of your real estate needs in the Austin area. Just give her a call today at 512-784-0505. That's 512-784-0505. Laura is not only a diehard Longhorn fan, but a longtime Austin real estate expert. So reach out and acquire her services today if you need them at 512-784-0505. Hey, Coach, thanks for the time. As always, can't thank you enough. I leave smarter every time I'm done with Football Theory because of your knowledge. Thanks, Coach. Enjoy the weekend.
Hey, I'm going to, man. I can't wait to hook up with you Monday afternoon.
That's right.
Drive, baby.
Winning drive. Glad Coach reminded me. Starting on Monday, myself, Coach Shipley, and my man CJ Vogel, we're going to be doing a show Monday and Thursday starting at 4:15. So come check us out. It's going to be a lot of fun. I'm looking forward to that. Until next time, thank you guys for watching and listening to Football Theory. Thank you to Laura Baker as well. Thank you to Coach Shipley. And until next time, hook 'em.